o'clock now, so we'll make a start. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're very pleased that you've joined us for our webinar this afternoon. Our presenters will be Ross McIntyre from Mimas at the University of Manchester, Angela Conyers from Evidence Base at Birmingham City University, and Paul Needham from Cranfield University. Valvia Note, our GIST program manager, was unable to be with us today, but she's provided the first set of slides, which Ross will be speaking to. After the presentation, we'll be having a question and answer session. Please type your questions in the chat box as we go along and precede them with the letter Q. The webinar is being recorded and will be made available on the Irish UK website. Our first speaker is Ross. So can I hand over to you, and can you switch your microphone on, please?
Okay. I'll start with a few words that were given on, that I'm delivering on behalf of Valvia Note, who supplied the notes. If we just go into provide sort of the GISC view of all this. GISC began work in the repository usage area in earnest really in about 2009. With this PARIS project that you'll hear a bit more about and we refer to. But there's always been a fair amount of work going on, principally under the knowledge exchange banner, for example, in Europe. And now GISC are in the process of building and delivering a national shared service for usage statistics. Sort of recognizes that there's a growing need to measure the usage of the material that's in the repositories. I mean, there are now well over 200 repositories in the UK, and also it has parallels outside, so Open Air, for example, and in the library sector. Now, usage is obviously an important factor in, if you like, the impact story, along with traditional or familiar things such as citation analysis, and then new initiatives like altmetrics. And usage statistics support the provision of management reports and wider business intelligence gathering. And in particular, national aggregation of usage allows for benchmarking, making quality measures possible. So GISC are investing in Irish UK to try and obtain such a capability to get a nationwide picture of the overall use of repositories to demonstrate their value and impact. That's not just to GISC as well, but it's to the, you know, the institutions themselves and then other players. So another aspect to it is that Irish UK could act as a focal point to cooperate with other initiatives. So Open Air, for example, have already expressed an interest in obtaining usage statistics for EU-funded research. And GISC is planning IRIS UK. It's actually in the context of a coordinated repository, set of repository shared services. It follows on from the UK RepNet initiative, which ends at the end of this month. And the next bullet point, although I haven't highlighted it, is probably the big important message from this GISC, which is that for a period of 2 years from the 1st of August, GISC will be building on that work to support sustainable repository services. So I hope people who were part of the UK IR community will regard that as a positive message and get some assurance that this is, we're talking about services, not projects. Alongside that, there will be some naming and branding, presumably, and importantly, GISC will be responsible for the coordination and management of the services themselves, developing the appropriate business models and ensuring it's part of a scalable infrastructure that interoperates with research information management and research data management in that context. Now, there's a next set of slides with a lot of logos on, but I guess Valvia was trying to make the point that there are a number of services that GISC provides. I mean, some of these may be familiar to some of you, but I'll just go through them for reference. And also, there's a closer alignment now with that GISC involvement between such services and the quite extensive set of development programs that GISC funds. Some of these here may obviously give rise to services themselves. Okay. So now I'll go back onto IRIS UK. So this is about me talking. If I start with who we are and what we've done. Who we are, the IRIS UK team, if you like, as we've already acknowledged, funded by JISC as part of UK RepNet. The project team members, primary project team members, are Mimas, Cranfield, and Evidence Base. Mimas being responsible for the project management and service management now, Cranfield for development, and Evidence Base for the community engagement and evaluation activities. But I would stress it's actually very much a collaborative development. It's for and of the AR community. And just for a bit of scoping, IRIS UK, because I'm not sure I've said it so far, actually stands for Institutional Repository Usage Statistics in the UK. So we're aiming to enable UK institutional repositories to share and expose those usage statistics based on a global standard, which is Counter. And as I've said before, it's emerged from a previous project, and I've given the reference there. So I won't describe it any further. So if we get into what we've put in place, there is now a production strength service infrastructure, the website and the portal and authentication, etc. There are tracker code, there have been a number of tracker code developments that support the transmission of the usage information for DSpace, eprints. For Fedora, we had a working example as part of the Paris 2 project at Oxford University, but there you're really having to develop your own code, so it's more of a functional specification. We have also had a number of discussions with Atira to see if it's feasible to add tracker functionality to the pure portal software, and we have recently successfully applied it to the OAPEN library, which is built on some repository software called Arno. So it's possible to move outside. It's not restricted to just dprints and dspace. We've got 33 repositories in the UK live, and so we're measuring downloads, not record views, if you remember that. So it's where somebody has actually taken some content. And we're processing those raw data into Counter compliance statistics. We've, in previous webinars, we've run through precisely what that means. But if you just take away that it means that they've all been processed on the same basis, and the same basis, in fact, as publishers. We make them available to the original repositories for their own use, but we can also provide an aggregated picture of the use made of items in the UK. Just to add on to the Counter compliance, one of the things that that requires is the filtering of robots and abnormal use. And as part of IRIS, we've gone over and above the minimum specified by Counter. And in fact, I think Paul will describe a bit later on some work that we've commissioned to devise an adaptive filtering system that'll do some of those more programmatically. We published an item types report that covers the use of item types in UK institutional repositories, and we revised it in light of feedback where people wanted greater granularity, so typically art, music, exhibition thing, items being drawn out separately. The Counter Paris Code of Practice Release 1 was issued out for comment until the end of April this year, and so the final version is now being worked on for release later this year. And Evidence Base have also done a fair amount of evaluation, dissemination, such as this webinar, and community engagement, latterly involving colleagues from other JISC repository projects. But if I just end with, most importantly, what we've managed to do, I guess, is secure funding to take IRIS UK into service proper over the next 2 years, which I'm very pleased about. So maybe we could just go into a live demo now.
Thanks very much, Ross. Paul, we'll hand over to you now. Can you switch your microphone on, please?
As many of you have already attended webinars, you know usually I do quite a big preamble and a few slides before going into the demo, but because this is sort of the project wrap-up before we move into the next phase, growing service, we've shifted things around a bit. So I'm just going to scoot through the portal as it stands now and you know, speak a few words over some of the screens. What you're seeing at the moment is the homepage, and this is sort of the dashboard view that just tells you where we are at a glance. It confirms that we have 33 repositories. We have recorded downloads against over 100,000 items, and since we started in July last year with just three or four repositories, as you know, we've built up to 33 since, we have recorded over 4.5 million downloads across all item types. This page shows you a bit more of a breakdown by repository. The levels of downloads vary greatly, of course, across repositories, not surprisingly, because we've got some big institutions in, like the London School of Economics, and we have other smaller ones that have lower volumes of usage. The actual raw sort of levels of usage, I don't think you should read too much into. As I like to tell people, one use of one document sometimes can have huge value and a huge impact, where lots of uses of lots of documents can have minimal impact. Another view we've got, which in and of itself at the moment is not particularly useful, is it's just splitting down what we've recorded by platform. Of course, this is skewed because we have quite a few more eprints than DSpace platforms. But as we grow up to a sort of critical mass and production strength, we may be able to show some interesting metrics about perhaps difference in the typical number of downloads from the different software types and start to dig some interesting stuff out from there. A more useful view, perhaps, is to look at the downloads by item type. Of particular interest to many people, of course, are articles. And as you can see, articles are heavily represented amongst our downloads, with over 1.6 million since we started. Other popular types include theses and dissertations and conferences and books. Some of the more obscure types obviously have lower views. The item types that you're seeing are the item types that are detailed in Anne Reed's item type report that Ross mentioned before. The reason we've settled on a relatively small set is because the source repositories catalog the various items they have in many, many different ways, and the list goes on and on and on. And if you want to browse through a list by item type, the raw list is virtually unusable. Pages and pages of it, but we do retain the original source types should they be needed, and we can also map from the original source types to different item type classification schemes as and when required. We're not just limited to using the IRIS item type list. I think one of the important things that we can do is we can actually get hold of DOIs associated particularly with articles, but also with other item types. The DOI is important because it is a unique identifier for an article. And so if an article is hosted on multiple repositories and the DOI has been recorded, then of course we can say this item on this repository actually is the same item, a different instance of the same item on a different repository, and potentially allows us to consolidate usage for an article across multiple platforms. The number of DOIs that we've picked up for different institutions vary wildly. Again, at this stage, please don't read too much into that. The ingest process, as first set up, does a pretty good job at picking up DOIs, but only in a limited format. There have been a number of issues there, and we will be addressing this and picking up a lot more DOIs, however they're expressed. And that's a piece of work that we will be looking at with urgency soon. Like any portal, of course, you have to have some kind of search facility in place. I'm now going to search for any items we have in the portal connected with IRIS. And you'll see, in fact, to return two items that are clearly the same article, one of them hosted at Huddersfield and the other hosted at Cranfield. Looking at the statistics for the version hosted at Cranfield, you can see that it's been getting regularly used over the months, and I can tell you there are spikes in its usage usually after these webinars. The top graph is showing usage at a monthly granularity. bottom graph shows you usage at a daily granularity for the last 28 days. This is only an example of the sort of things we can start to pull out. And clearly, with a DOI, which both of these have catalogued, it's possible to construct a slightly different query and provide consolidated statistics for that article hosted across Huddersfield and Cranfield. Now, this screen is one that I'm particularly fond of. What you're seeing in the five columns are, on the left-hand column, the raw data in. This is the raw download data that we've been receiving from repositories. And the sort of middle three columns show you the effects of the filtering that we apply in the ingest process. And the right-hand column gives you the filtered figures that have been processed according to the counter code of practice. Generally, I have to say that the counter exclusions have worked well. For instance, if you look at Bournemouth, you'll see that out of over 4 million downloads in the raw data, 3.8 have been excluded as robots recognised by counter, and only a relatively small number, 58,000, taken out by additional filters that we've used. Other repositories, the situation is different. If you look at LSE Research, for instance, the picture is the opposite picture of 2.3 million raw download data in, just under 250,000 excluded by counter, and nearly 1.5 million excluded by the additional filters that we've applied, the additional agents that we have identified. I'll come back to this in a few moments. In addition to what you see in the portal, of course, it's important to be able to get things out. We do have an API, which I'm not going to show you today, but we also do provide a couple of reports that can be used. Of primary interest to the repositories at this stage is the item report one. I'm showing you the view in the web page, but on the preceding screen, you could equally have selected to download it as a CSV file. Point being, it looks pretty much like a standard counter report for those of you that know this, and gives you the filtered figures per item in your repository with a repository identifier. So you can download these reports and do pretty much what you like with them. A second report that we produce is a consolidated article report. Now, this is really just an example of what's possible. The idea in the original PARIS 2 project was that it would be possible to transmit consolidated reports about article usage in UK repositories to a global central clearinghouse. Now, that doesn't actually exist at the moment, but this was just here as a demonstration that we can output a report wherever we've got an article that has a DOI, which the Global Central Clearinghouse would need for matching. That Global Central Clearinghouse could then take our figures and match them against the downloads recorded by publishers and aggregators and any other hosts and platforms where those articles are held. I think for now that's all I really want to say about the portal, and that's where we are. So I'll now stop sharing my screen and move on in just a moment. So that sort of sums up where we are. So what I'd like to do now is just start to move into talking a little bit about some of the things that we're going to do next. And of course, I'll begin, in fact, by describing briefly something we were doing and we're going to be changing. The existing ingest process has been described in detail in previous webinars and presentations, in particular in the last webinar, the technical aspects of IRIS, which you can look at via that URL. I think the key is just to remember that what we are doing is taking a global standard code of practice to remove machine accesses and odd usage and double clicks to give a nice clean filtered set of usage statistics. However, as Ross already mentioned, the counter robot exclusion list is only a minimum requirement. It is possible to do more. And as I showed you in the ingest statistics, we have done more. We've used additional filters to remove more user agents and also applied a simple threshold for what I'm just calling overactive IP addresses. So, for example, if there are more than 200 downloads from a single IP address against a single repository, that's highly unlikely, you know, in one day, that's highly unlikely that that was human access. The work we've done is substantially better than the figures we were getting before we added new filters, but we're really not satisfied still, and we know we need something a bit more sophisticated, a bit cleverer in place. To this end, we commissioned a consultancy company called Information Power to analyse all the raw data we've been collecting since July last year, with the task set to test the feasibility of devising a set of algorithms that would dynamically identify and filter out unusual usage and robot activity. A report on that work is available from our news and activities page at that URL. There are a set of thresholds which we'll be looking at in more detail in the coming months and starting to apply. But I guess a couple of key findings from the work are that you really can't judge suspicious behavior just on the basis of looking at one day's records or a month's records. Meaning, you know, if you really want to tackle robots, you have to do some fairly comprehensive analyses over an extensive data set. The other thing is, however hard you try, you get down to a certain level and it becomes practically impossible to distinguish genuine human activity from machine activity. So if you have a machine that just hits one or two items a day across a number of repositories, it's not a human doing it, it's a machine, but you'll never know, not unless that IP or that user agent would clearly identify it. So there is a limit. You can get pretty close, but you can never get to absolute perfection in eliminating non-genuine usage. So going forward, as I say, we're going to test out an experiment with the new dynamic filtering with the various thresholds that have been proposed and see how that goes. However, we are, you know, a service, or we're going to be a service, and we have to be pragmatic. We can't spend 26 hours a day analyzing the data on a daily basis. You know, that literally aren't enough hours in the day. So talking this through with the team, we're going to go for a best result for least effort approach. What we think this means in practice is over each calendar month, we will continue with a sort of daily set of filters. They'll be slightly more sophisticated than the crude ones I've been using, but it'll be fairly light touch still. And for each current month, we'll put stats into a provisional daily statistics table. So there's a proviso there that at the end of each month, we're going to reprocess the stats for the last month. Because once a month, clearly, it's feasible to apply a more comprehensive, sophisticated filtering that we can leave to run for several hours and examine the whole data set available and to restate those stats, load those into a permanent daily stats table, empty the provisional table, ready to start the whole process again next month. As I say, we can't ever get to perfection in an open web environment, but what we hope is one day we will be producing the best run stats in town. Now I'm going to sort of fire fairly quickly through the rest of my slides because I really wanted to emphasize the key to this for us is to get rid of as much non-genuine usage as possible. You know, once you've done that and you've got some data in a database, the rest is relatively trivial. The technical side is not that difficult. Looking at the tracker patches and add-ons, as you know, we have them available for DSpace and dprints. Now, there are some e-prints out there that are older than 3.2. We did discuss feasibility of getting extra add-on commission to work with earlier versions, but in practice, it's really not feasible. And the best way for more e-prints folks to join us is if you're not already on 3.2 or 3.3, we implore you, please look at upgrading. The upgrade path is fairly straightforward and I'm sure not fraught at all. On the DSpace side, we have patches for 1.8 and 3 branches of DSpace, but there are a lot of older DSpace instances out there still running 1.6, 1.7, and the upgrade path and the task of upgrading DSpace is sometimes fraught, which is why I think there are possibly quite a number of older instances out there. So in order to enable quite a few more repositories to participate, shortly we'll be commissioning work to get patches for versions 1.6 and 1.7 made available. Other software platforms, we really have to look at them on a case-by-case basis. As Fedora's been mentioned many times, every single Fedora repository is a one-off. We have provided some general guidelines on perhaps how to apply the tracker to Fedora. And I guess good piece of news, Hull University are committed to working on installing tracker functionality into their Fedora repository, quite possibly in the autumn. We hope A, that that work is successful, and B, that it might provide a useful case study for others to follow. Pure portals is another matter. We don't think it would be that difficult to get the tracker functionality added to pure portals. It really is a matter of persuading Atira that there is enough interest in the UK and perhaps beyond to make it worth their while to add the tracker functionality to their software. Ross already mentioned we've also demonstrated that it's possible to quite easily add the tracker to other platforms such as Arno, and we hope that there will be various other platforms that we can get talking to soon and get things moving. Quick advert, we really would welcome dialogue with any interested vendors and developers for other IR software platforms. Get in touch with us. Of course, important to our community is not so much the efforts or the work that we have to put into getting the stats into the database and into the portal in the first place, but what you can get out. I freely admit that what we've got so far is fairly skeletal, and one area we really will be focusing on will be adding new views and reports to the portal. One area we've had requests for is to enable individual repositories to delve deeper into their own stats. So that's an area that we'll be looking at, again, with some urgency. Also, I mentioned that we've had variable success in picking up DOIs. Well, as part of enhancing the ingest, I will be revamping the way it looks for DOIs. And picking up a lot more, and also then expanding the views and reports and whatever else you want with DOIs in the portal. We'll be adding more DOI-based pages. Another important thing is, for interoperability with other agencies, is the ability to match things up by funder and grant number. And this is something we will again be doing, both with reference to the UK Research Councils and with Open Air. So that would be two very good illustrations of the utility of IRIS in acting on behalf of UK IRs. An important element of counter has always been the ability to retrieve statistics via SUSHI, the Standardized Usage Statistics Harvesting Initiative, which is a SOAP web service. Up until very recently, and in fact till the end of the year, it's been running on counter release 3 requirements, but counter release 4 comes into force at the beginning of next year. So we'll be making sure that our SUSHI service meets the requirements for release 4. The other important area, you know, in machine-to-machine world is, of course, having an API to allow a machine to interrogate our database so that, for instance, repositories can incorporate user statistics directly into their own pages. We do have an initial version in place, and we started to build some plans to expand and enhance the existing version. Although, again, we can only go so far until we have further concrete requirements for the API. We can only do what we think people want. And again, I urge anybody who has thoughts in this area, do get in touch with me. And I'm quite happy to work on the API to make it do what you want. And that's really all I have to say. So I'll sign off now. And I think you're going over to Angela.
Thanks very much, Paul. Angela, could you turn your microphone on, please, and we'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Anne, and hello, everyone. I hope you can hear me all right. Well, as you're discovering, there's a growing number of repositories that are now in IRIS UK. We've currently got 33 participants, and they're a mix of ePrints and DSpace, and I know a number of you are on this webinar today. As you've heard, we are going to be looking at other types of repository software as well, but our start has been with ePrints and DSpace. A few weeks after joining, we send out a survey to all new participants. We want to get their initial views and ideas, and also find out if they've come across any particular challenges that we may need to address when they're using the portal. And we're very grateful to those of you who've completed this questionnaire, as it helps us with our future planning. And it's also given us the community view on the value of the work we're doing. And that's been a great encouragement to us now that we're moving forward. So what do the users think are the best things about IRIS UK? The points that came up the most among respondents were the reliable statistics, the benchmarking opportunities, the way the usage statistics could demonstrate value, and also how quick and easy it was to set up. Respondents also saw benefits for their institutions in having such reliable figures available and with the ability to benchmark with others. Several felt as well that it would increase the rate of deposit as we could demonstrate to researchers how content was being used across the whole repository network, as was in the example Paul had earlier. There was also a hope that it would improve workflow and so save staff time. The respondents described their current ways of collecting repository statistics and reported any challenges they faced in current methods. The majority of them expected that IRIS UK would improve their statistical reporting. And remember that we're sending this questionnaire out very early, so a few were not quite sure at this early stage how it was going to work. IRIS UK, as you know, is built on the idea of open data. All data that we have in the portal is currently open. We always check this out with new participants, and so far it hasn't been an issue, though if it ever was, we could find a way of accommodating it. The vast majority of respondents were happy with this idea and indeed very supportive of it because of the benchmarking opportunities it provides. As regards institutional attitudes, there was a bit less certainty. This probably reflects the different procedures and policies that are in place that repository managers may need to check on before they can commit on behalf of their institutions. Well, here are some views we've had from the IRIS UK community that came out through the survey. You'll see from these the support we've received for the further development of IRIS UK, which, as we just heard, is now going to go ahead. And we should thank you all for the support we've had from you. Notice the last quote here, great work and hope that other IRs join up as soon as possible. So my next message to you is, if you're responsible for a UK repository and you haven't yet joined IRIS UK, just contact us at iris.mimus.ac.uk and we'll advise you how to get set up. We are looking forward to continuing to work now with the IRIS UK community and to gather your views and ideas as we go forward with the ideas that Ross and Paul have just described to you. There's a lot of work going to be going on there, and we hope that we will continue the dialogue with the community as it goes ahead. So here are the contact details, and I'll hand you back to Anne now for any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Angela, and thank you to all our presenters. We'll now move into the question and answer session. We've already got some questions in the chat box ready for us, but if you've got any more, please feel free to add them. And we'll start with our first question, which is one from Luis Fernando. Ross, this came up in slide 11, where you were talking about the current status, where you mentioned downloads and not record views, and Luis Fernando asked for some clarification of that.
Yeah, it's right from the beginning, all we've ever counted are downloads, which correspond to a specific activity and which are relevant to the international standard that we're applying. So that's all we treat. We're not particularly interested in the reading activity of people who may browse through citation references but then don't physically obtain the object, because in a lot of instances here we are talking about a full text of an article or some other object of meaning, and so we're interested in somebody actually obtaining that whole content and regarding that as a download, as an activity, as opposed to something that's very difficult to ascribe any particular value to, which were the views. Although I know that some people are interested in views turning into subsequent downloads, but it tended to be perhaps publishers investigating the usability of their sites and that kind of thing. Paul, I think you're going to cut in.
Yeah, or to put it another way, we're interested in the article or thesis or conference paper downloads, not in the abstract views, where somebody browses, reads the abstract, and presumably then decides, you know, either to download or not download. Counter has never really worked at that level. It's always been about what actual content has been used. So I'll just add very quickly, another reason in modern times for being less concerned with abstract views as opposed to file downloads is that typically most people will find PDFs or whatever on your repositories via Google, and they will download that PDF straight away without ever necessarily seeing any of the pages in your IRs.
Thanks. We've got another question from Luis Fernando. This one came up, Paul, while you were doing the live demo of the portal, and he asked whether you're planning to share the IRIS exclusion rules. Now, you actually went on to talk more about this later on in your presentation, but I don't know. Do you want to add anything?
Yes. I mean, at some point, the answer to that question is yes. Yes, of course, we will share those rules. At the moment, I really want to take, two or three months to, as I say, test and experiment what Information Power came up with. And we will report on those findings and, of course, quite happily share our findings about practical thresholds and how to apply the rules in practice. And ultimately, having spoken with Counter, we're hopeful that if our work in this area is successful, that Counter will adopt this threshold system in the Counter Pyrus Code of Practice. So yeah, at that point, obviously, it becomes totally publicly available. We will be sharing that information anyway.
Thank you. We've then got a question from John. I think this is one for Ross. John is asking, when IRIS becomes a service, will there be a charge?
No. There's no the part of the reason they've JISC have put 2 years on is to sort out any of that kind of stumbling block for people joining. It's the difference between a you know a service and a project. So they've wanted to have a clear planning horizon. Of course, sustainability will come into it, but the from day one there is no intention to charge. And there are no plans to charge either, although they may come out depending on I don't know, circumstances further down the line. I can never say never, but no.
Thanks, Ross. And then we have a question from Ricky. Are we going to map the IP downloads to country or city? I think one for you, Paul.
Okay. We don't have any plans to do that at the moment. Again, this is not something that Counter has done or does. But I would say something we quite often do say to everybody is don't just use IRIS UK stats anyway. Feel free to use it you know, in parallel with IR stats if you're an ePrints repository or with DSpace statistics if you're running DSpace. Or if you're running Google Analytics, Google gives you quite a good view of the range of countries or cities that have been accessing your content. So I think we form the solid basis for some reliable figures. Use this in parallel with other stat services and you can build up quite a rich picture around that. Again, like Ross says on this sort of thing, never say never, but we don't currently have any plans to map IP downloads to country city.
Thanks. Has anybody got any other questions for us?
Yeah, there are a couple more just come in.
Thanks, Paul. Another question from Luis Fernando. At some point, will IRIS become international and not only for the UK? Ross, could I ask you to answer that one?
Yeah, there's technically no reason for IRIS to be specific to the UK. It's just we give it a context and we have a funding source, which is JISC, which is investing in it. So the investment there is covered as part of a national initiative. So if it depends what is behind the question, which is if we were to offer an IRIS EU or an IRIS for France or an IRIS for Iceland, then effort would have to be funded and covered. That doesn't mean to say that we wouldn't collaborate on some of the shareable information, but it just comes down to the resources and paying for the resources in some kind of sustainable way. I mean, part of the things that we're keen to do is to share information and approaches and things that are consistent internationally, which is why we always hark back to this is an implementation of an internationally agreed, recognised standard that is already global. And using DOIs, again, they're international persistent identifiers and so on and so on and so on. If you talk to either myself or Paul, we're very enthusiastic about this whole area to the point of being psychotic. So we're very interested in international collaboration. And as I was saying in the opening remarks, a lot of the thinking that went into PIRUS came out of some working groups under the Knowledge Exchange banner. And I know there are some people who are in on this webinar who were there. And again, they built on some of the work that was done at Los Alamos in the Measure project. So we're very keen to take the ideas forward. But if you're saying, could we set up a system to do something for another country, then there would have to be a conversation and we'd have to understand who was going to do what and resourced and where the funds were coming from. Sorry if that was a longer answer then.
No, I'll echo Ross's comments there. I mean, the simplest way to consider this might be to think of parallel IRIS services. So as well as IRIS UK, there would be IRIS MX in Mexico, IRIS ES in Spain, IRIS US in the States, and so on. But as Ross says, in each case, then it becomes a question of how is that set up and funded? I mean, it may be possible, no promises, but it may be possible that we could run some hosted services, but they would have to be funded. We couldn't fund them out of the money we get from GISP, which is UK in scope.
Thanks both. We've got a question now from John, who says, you mentioned duplicate DOIs where items exist in two repositories. Is there any way to also include download stats from publishers' websites, as a lot of the items in his IR are metadata only with DOI links? Ross or Paul?
Not at the moment. You know, we've mentioned PIRUS quite a few times, and PIRUS was publisher and institutional repository usage statistics, and we did demonstrate that technically it is feasible to consolidate the statistics from publisher websites and repositories to give you a more complete view of the use of an article. At some time in the future, we still hope to add the P back into into IRIS and get publishers engaged. And I am talking, whenever possible, with publishers who are more forward-thinking, perhaps, than some of the others, to see if we could start some small trial experiments to do this. It doesn't just finish with articles, for instance. There's also theses. We have the Ethos service in the UK, which is the British Library-run theses service. And it would be nice if we could exchange statistics between those two systems and show them in each other's systems. So interoperating with other services, expanding the scope of what we can include by getting other organizations, agencies involved. This is something we're always thinking about and looking to do. So the answer is not at the moment, but one day, yes.
Can I just add as well that obviously if you've got the DOIs, that you've then got the link to do it, and we've got a proven technical mechanism to support it, and I think there'll become an increased demand for it when you're talking about open access material.
Thanks both. We then got a question from Bethan asking whether self-installation of the patch is the only means of setting up the service and whether there will be any additional technical support. Paul, can I ask you to answer this one?
Yes, indeed. Some repositories are doing self-install. Others have had the install done for them if they have a hosted service. I guess if you're talking about a patch, Bethan, you're talking about DSpace, are you? Right. And I'm guessing from your question that you are hosting your own version of DSpace. At the moment, we don't have any additional technical support in place, but the very fact you've asked the question means that shortly after this webinar, as a team, we will be getting together and seeing if there's any way that we can come up with some mechanism to provide additional technical support should you require it. This was something that cropped up under the banner of UK Repository Net, UK RepNet, but as Ross mentioned, that per se finishes at the end of this month. So just at this stage to say we will discuss it and hopefully come back to you with some positive answer.
Thanks, Paul. It's nearly 3 o'clock. Do we have one final question from anybody, please? Okay, I'll draw things to a close. It's been a very hot afternoon. Thank you very much once again to all our presenters. And thank you to everybody for joining us this afternoon. If you do have a question that we didn't have time to answer, please email our help desk, iris@mimus.ac.uk, and we'll get back to you shortly. We've recorded the webinar, and the recording will be made available on the Irish UK website, as will the PowerPoint presentation. After the webinar, we'll be circulating a short questionnaire to all participants, and we'd very much value it if you could take a few minutes to complete it for us. Please remember to log out of the session using the exit button above the list of participants. Thank you and goodbye.